It's a little late. Are you? We're going to hang in here. I think that I was given 30 minutes. Now we'll see if we can speed it up just a little bit. But I'm delighted to get to do this message today, and to honor our Pastor Dan. I have three goals this morning. The first one is to honor you, my pastor, too. The second is to honor and lift up Jesus. And the third is that I would encourage all of you, each of you and all of you. When, this just seems a little hot. All right. Okay. When Pastor Dan preaches, I know we all know this, but I just wanted to mention it because it's so obvious to me. It doesn't really matter what the theme of the month is, or what the title of his sermon is, or the subject of his sermon. Three things are going to happen. He's going to declare the praises of Jesus. He's going to remind us that Jesus loves us. And he is going to speak with eloquence. His communication skill is extraordinary. The highest form of flattery is imitation. And I'll do my best imitation, but I don't have all that. The title of my message, as it says in the bulletin, is Jesus, Lord of All the Storms. And I have an alternate title if you prefer. Jesus, he's got that too. Jesus is Lord of the storms outside of us. He's Lord of the storms inside of us. And he's also Lord over the storm of sin and death. This afternoon, I'm going to talk to the first two and not the third one. Although the third one is probably the most important. But maybe that'll be a sermon another time. Not long ago, I was remembering a childhood memory when I was a teenager. It was a boating story. We had gotten a new boat. It was not new in any stretch. It was old and it was beaten up. It was a government facility for the Water Commission. And they had taken this boat. It had an aluminum hull, and they had rammed it into things and poked holes in the hull, and then had to patch it with welded patches of metal. And I'm just trying to say that we bought this boat for less than $1,000. It wasn't a lot of money. That was all we could afford. But it was big enough that our family of eight could fit in it. And for the maiden voyage, we lived in Northern Virginia. We were going to put the boat in the water near the airport and go across the Potomac River, where they did evening concerts during the summer on the water. It was a symphony concert kind of thing. And so we arrived there, about 100 boats, say, all at just sitting out in the water waiting for the concert to start. And we realized that it looked like our boat was not as high in the water as it had been when we left, you know. And so we lifted up the motor cover, the engine in the back of the boat, and there was a foot of water in the bottom of the boat, and it was growing. And fortunately, we had what's called a bilge pump that was in the boat. Flip a switch and it starts pumping out water, and it was pumping out water faster than it was accumulating. So that was a good sign. But we knew we were not going to get to listen to the concert that night. There was still a little bit of light. It was dusk. We needed to head back and get out of the water. As I was remembering that episode, I remember also that my parents had agreed together that they were going to name this boat Mark 4, which is for the fourth chapter of Mark in the Gospel. And there's a boat story in that chapter. It ends with a boat story, and that's where we want to begin. But before we go there, I have a question for you. I frequently have a question, don't I? It's one of the things I do. Okay. Does anyone know when chapters appeared in the Bible? Okay, so it's a multiple choice question. I'm going to give you four answers. I'm going to ask you to vote, and we'll just see, you know, if we get it or not. All right. So the first answer is in the original writings. And I'm not asking you to answer now. I'm going to give you four options in the original writings. Second is the 4th century or 300s, which is when Christianity became the state religion of the Roman Empire. Third is the 13th century or the 1200s. And the fourth is the 16th century or the 1500s. Okay? Those are the four options. So who thinks that there was chapter divisions in the Bible as it was originally written? No votes. That's amazing. How about in the 4th century, the 300s, when it was 13th century, early 1200s? Three. I see those hands. 16th century, mid 1500s. All of you are wrong. It was the 13th century, the 1200s. And it wasn't a trick question, but there were some chapter divisions that were created in the scripture in the 300s, but not like the Bible that we have today. The Bible that we have today dates from the 1200s. The point is that for over 1,000 years, the Bible did not have chapter divisions. The books of the Bible were written either as like a story or a letter, and they started with the first letter, and I'm not sure if they started on the right or the left or the bottom or the top, but it basically was written continuously. They didn't even have spaces. The work that it takes to translate the Bible from the original languages is absolutely unbelievable, but that's a different thing. I was reminiscing about our ill-fated maiden voyage in Mark 4, and it occurred to me that just possibly the next chapter in Mark 5 might relate to Mark 4. I thought I would just, you know, the next time that I read it, I would just keep reading and see what I thought. And the conclusion I came to is they are related. And so I want to speak to both of those passages. If you want to follow along, we're going to look at Mark 4, 35 to 41. I'm not going to read it, but you won't know that. I'm going to speak to the points of it pretty rapidly. Jesus requested, again, it's Mark 4, 35 to 41. Jesus requested the disciples to take him with them across the lake to the other side. And they left the crowd, took Jesus with them in the boat. I want to remind you that four of the disciples were professional fishermen. They lived on the water. There wasn't anything about boating that they didn't thoroughly understand. But it says in verse 37, a furious squall came up. Waves were spilling over the sides of the boat, beginning to swamp it. One of the problems when the water starts to get over the sides of the boat is it accelerates. The boat starts to get lower, and so more of the waves go over. And it can be really fast, and the boat is swamped. So a couple questions, you know, like, have you ever been in a sinking boat? I was in a sinking boat, and it's pretty scary. Like, you know, when you know that, well, did they have life preservers 2,000 years ago? Mm-mm. How about what happens when a boat gets full of water? It sinks. It goes to the bottom. What happens if you're in a turbulent, stormy sea and you no longer got a boat? That's it. I mean, all right. Put yourself in this boat. Jesus is asleep in the back of the boat while this is going on. I don't know if that's a trick or what. I don't. But it's hard to imagine. But nevertheless, he was asleep in the boat. And the disciples, they were terrified. And they woke him up and screamed, "Rabbi, don't you care if we drown?" Jesus got up and rebuked the wind and told the waves, "Quiet, be still." And the winds and the waves obeyed. Do you know anybody with that kind of power? It was completely calm. And then Jesus asked the disciples, "Why were you so afraid?" Die? Do you still have no faith? And disciples were terrified. And they asked each other, "Who is this? Who is this? Even the winds and waves obey him." I'm with the disciples in the boat. Their reaction seems to me perfectly reasonable. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that I'm with them. I'm with them. It's also interesting, if you read it, that it kind of communicates that disciples were just about as terrified of Jesus as they were of the storm. And I'm with them on that too. If you imagine that you're with somebody who says to the storm, "Be still," and it obeys, that's a pretty powerful dude, right? I mean, I'm not sure I want to be very close to that guy. Jesus demonstrated a completely, totally unique relationship to nature. Power and authority over it. Unlike any man who has ever lived before or since. What is the point or application? Well, I want to see if I forgot something. I don't think so. Yeah. I think that Jesus has power and authority over the storms that are outside of us. But he doesn't exercise that very often. We've had the past several months, of it in our face. We had 4 hurricanes. 2 of them were devastating, right? Just absolutely devastating. There was that terrible earthquake in Mexico. And we have 15 or so wildfires burning in California for weeks, and 8,500, at last count I heard, 8,500 buildings burnt to the ground. Over 5,000 of them, people's homes, gone, just completely gone. Now, Jesus obviously has the power and authority to prevent that from happening if he wanted to, which is not to say that he wants it to be bad, just that he has not chosen to operate the way that he did in the boat. We experience all kinds of storms. There are those kinds, the weather kinds of storms. We might have a storm where the money runs out before the end of the month. We might have lost a job, or maybe we're a broken relationship that's very precious to us, and yet it's alienated. It might be a family member or a friend. It might be a spouse. It might be a child. We've got the storms of losing loved ones when God calls them home. I was doing a little research about the civil wars in the central part of Africa. Uganda and the countries around there, and over 1 million people perished in the 30 years between 1980 and 2010. 1 million people, and 5 million people were displaced to save their lives. They had to become refugees to avoid being put to death. And that doesn't, that's just Africa. That's not the Middle East, which is worse, you know. So, and God allows that to happen. And he allows it because sin, you know, the entire universe was affected by sin. And the earth, as God designed it, was affected by sin. You know, another thing that we've had is tsunamis. And I was reading, I don't remember when it was. I think it was, again, in 1980, but it might have been 1990. There was a tsunami in the Indian Ocean that killed 200,000 people. And a tsunami happens when the plates under the ocean move. They just move, like an earthquake under the ocean happens. And a tsunami occurs. And so there was one in 200,000 people. It's hard to process. But what I ask myself about it, I don't know the answer, but I believe that Jesus' power over the storms, or his ability to control the storms, is not the point of Mark telling us this story. And it's also in Luke, and it's also in Matthew. And what I mean is that that Jesus is the point of the story, not that he can control nature. The fact that he can control nature is part about who he is. But what is important is who he is, and not the control of things. So God has not protected us from the fact that the entire earth is under the control, domain of sin, and that there's going to be loss, and there's going to be trauma, there's going to be all the things that we would like to be protected from. But Jesus didn't promise to protect us. He promised to be with us. He said he would be with us always. I will never leave you or forsake you. Behold, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. I hope that's clear. Well, I want to continue with Mark 5. And this I do want to read. And we're going to read the first part of Mark 5, which is verses 1 to 20. That sounds like a lot, but actually only takes 4 minutes to read them. It's going to take a little longer because I'm going to comment on the verses as we go. This is the healing of a demon-possessed man. We're talking now about storms inside. Storms inside us. And they went across the lake to the region of Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. They just, the first story is of going across the lake, and they got, Jesus got him safely ashore. Now they're going across the lake again. The man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself. You think you got problems? You think you got problems? You know, like something in your thinking doesn't work right, or you got some emotional things, or perhaps illness, and you know, I read about this guy. He is a raging lunatic. He's naked, and he runs around screaming and yelling. And if he's done, if anything's done to restrain him, he just breaks it. That would be a pretty scary person too. And he doesn't even know that he's nuts. You know, we at least some of the time we know that we're not thinking right, we're not feeling right. What he doesn't even have the capacity to know that. He is really in trouble inside. And when he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. It's different. That's not his normal response to things. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." Was I screaming? That's, you know, he was screaming. He was screaming. Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What's your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we're many." This guy has got an army of demons in his body, in his mind. And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on a nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." And he gave them permission. They couldn't do it without Jesus' permission. The evil spirits came out, went into the pigs, and the herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down a steep bank into the lake and were drowned. One man for 2,000 pigs. In this collection, this body of Christ here, that makes sense. But in the world system, that doesn't make sense. 2,000 pigs is a lot of money. And this guy, people had nothing to do with him anymore. They didn't, you know, they gave up on him. There was no value in him. There was value in this herd of pigs. But to Jesus, this one man was of infinite value. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in a town and countryside. The people went out to see what happened, and when they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Their response was kind of like the disciples. Who has that kind of power and authority? And if he's got it, I don't want to get too close to it. He's scary. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. And the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. They don't want him around. He's operating in a different way than we do, and we don't want that. And so in this last paragraph, Jesus getting in the boat, the man who'd been demon-possessed begged to go with him, but Jesus didn't let him. He said, "Go home to your family. Tell them how much the Lord has done for you, how he's had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. Jesus dealt with the what was inside of him, the storms inside. And I think most of us can have a testimony that Jesus has done that for us. I just give you one testimony for myself, because one of the things, the issues that I have grown up with as an adult is overreacting. Does anybody else overreact? And not only did I overreact, but I didn't know that I overreacted, because I was in denial, I guess. So I've mentioned before that I'm in a 12-step group, and working through the 12 steps, it became apparent to me that the Lord said, you know, this is something that we could work on together. Would you like to work on this together? And so we've worked on it together, and I overreact much less than I used to. Much less. But Thursday, I was driving home from a training class. I was in Greenbelt, and I'm driving home. I'm in the car, and I got a hoodie on that's zippered and open, and I realized I'm really hot and sweaty, and I want this thing off. And so I got a stoplight, and I took off my seatbelt. I'm going to get this thing off, and I got my arm caught in a stupid hoodie, and I couldn't get my hand back out the thing, and I couldn't get my elbow out the back, and I'm just trying to get this. The light's going to change, and by the grace of God, I got out of it before the light changed. But the Lord said, we can still work on this. The third part of this message that I'm not giving is, like I said, the most important part. And that's just that Jesus, by his death and resurrection, demonstrated that he was a victor over sin. That God accepted his perfect sacrifice for sin on our behalf. Jesus didn't need to die for himself. He died for us, so we could have his perfection. And if another time we could develop that. Thanks. I guess we're done. Okay.